Hey, Real Blend listeners. On this week's show, we have an interview with Ed Solomon, the co-creator of the Bill and Ted franchise. We are talking Tenant with non-spoilers, and we do Octavia Spencer blend. So make sure you listen in.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 132 of Real Blend, a podcast that's apparently sponsored by Ready Player One. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here at Cinema Blend, and I am joined, as always, by my great friends, Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago, who is wearing a Ready Player One t-shirt. Hi, Jake.
It was genuinely a coincidence for people who are not watching at home, which you should. At this point, the YouTube videos, I think, are I would argue, the premier way to ingest our podcast. But if you're not watching us... I randomly wore a Ready Player One t-shirt that I pulled out the back of my closet, and Kevin showed up randomly wearing a Ready Player One hat.
Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hi, Kev.
Good afternoon,
sorry,
Sean.
Sorry, I jumped the gun on that.
Hi, Jake, Gabe. No, but to Jake's point, I always like to give a little backstory, but like when we get on to these calls, this Zoom call that we're on right now to record our interview, like we all pop up at different times depending on where we are in our day. And I guess, Jake, I opened my computer and logged in. And then I stepped away to go upstairs and get out of my suit because we were all wearing suits for something we were supposed to be doing today. And so I changed, come downstairs. I haven't seen Jake at all. I didn't even know Jake was on. And I threw this hat on only because I was upstairs going, my hair's getting long. Maybe I should wear a hat today. That was the only reason. Sean has a great chapter in his book about coincidences. Say that. And I just feel like they happen for a reason. And I think I just find it very cool that Jake and I did that in a very random way.
The crazy thing, Sean wearing Ready Player One underwear.
It's true. I am. Yeah. Like I ever wear
it. It's just
underwear.
Little Spielberg faces all over it.
Episode highlights. We're going to discuss the DC trailers that were shown at DC Fandom. We have Tenant. Oh my gosh, folks. All three of us have seen Tenant. We will have Tenant spoiler-free reactions. You will be able to listen to this week's episode.
What, Sean?
If you haven't seen Tenant yet. Say what again?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
And we have a guest. Ed Solomon is the co-writer and also co-creator of the Bill and Ted franchise. He's written all three of the films up to this point. And with Bill and Ted Face the Music coming to theaters and also on paid VOD, Ed Solomon swung by the Real Blend podcast for a conversation of all things Bill and Ted. What now? Do what?
Come again?
That made me laugh. Plugs. All right. Real Blend. So we have not one, guys, but two. YouTube channels that we would love for you to go over and subscribe to and turn on your notifications for. One of them is a channel that is dedicated fully to the visual element of the show, Real Blend. As Jake was saying, you get to see the t-shirts, you get to see the hats, you get to see all of our beautiful faces in really funny thumbnails that Gabe picks out over the course of editing. We also have one called Real Blend Clips, where we're pulling out individual segments that you guys can share with everybody. So head on over to those two YouTube channels and give us a follow, please. Gabe wants me to point out the fact that on the YouTube Clips one, we will have a lot of exclusive clips that don't make it into the show, but not... the premium episodes. The premium episodes are something special. They are for people who subscribe to our premium subscription, and you get a new show every Monday that's different from the regular show. I know, I'll wrap it up a second, but Gabe, I'm saying this for a reason. Because premium number 5, which we are going to record right after this episode, is Bathroom Blend.
But why wasn't it premium number 2?
That's a good question. That's a missed opportunity.
How did we let that slip by?
Gabe?
God, this show's gotten weird.
It's gotten weird.
Remember when we used to just show up and do the show?
I can promise.
It's much bigger now.
I can promise, because we're recording right after this and I have my picks. I can promise that not every pick, I don't know these guys' picks, but not every pick will be gross.
Mine's not gross.
My pick is classy.
Mine is not gross. Mine is actually very emotional. Okay. Yes, bathroom blend is going to get very emotional.
I don't know that Kevin's is gross. I don't know.
It doesn't have to be in relation to a bodily function, Kevin.
We're doing a half-assed,
no pun intended. No, it is a scene that takes place in a bathroom. You did not reply to the text thread last week.
Listen, I don't want to flush this idea down the toilet right off the bat.
I love how we're doing bathroom blend, but we're not really doing bathroom blend.
No. It is not bodily function blend. It is bathroom blend. It is a scene that takes place in a bathroom.
Jake, you are a smart individual. For the 3 years that we've been doing this show, the entire reason you guys didn't want to do bathroom blend was because it was jokingly immature. And now it's turned into, oh, we're going to pick the Mission Impossible Fallout scene because it took place in a bathroom.
Oh, that's a good one.
Bathroom blend is.
All right, we'll get into it on the premium.
We're stepping on the toes. Yes, okay. Weekly poll. So we posted a poll on Friday and we said, I waited till Monday to post this one because I waited for Fandom to be over and I asked you guys which movie technically won DC Fandom. Jake, your four choices are Wonder Woman 1984.
The Batman won. Right.
It's the Batman. Yes. The Batman won 61.9%.
I didn't even see the poll, but I know how people voted.
It beat out my beloved Snyder Cut, which got 24.3%. Suicide Squad got 9% and Wonder Woman 1984 got 4.8%. So let's talk about Matt Reeves' contributions to the DC universe. Batman, so the way I describe the Batman is essentially it's Seven with Batman and Commissioner Gordon instead of Mills and Somerset. And if that's what we end up getting, that's genius.
Like it looks like Fincher made a Batman movie.
Oh, God. But Matt Reeves, I don't want to shortchange Matt Reeves.
No, of course not.
Matt Reeves is amazing.
And it looks like the Riddler is going to be the Zodiac.
Yeah, and just when you think Batman couldn't get darker, like that's the darkest trailer I've ever seen. Like it is so dark. And I was talking to someone today about Batman and over the years kind of how, like my buddy of mine at work was like, yeah, when the original Batman came out with Keaton, people talked about how dark it was. And then they were like, well, wait till they got into the future and saw Bale and, you know, when what Nolan did with the Batman
films.
Remember
when we thought that was dark back in the day?
Right. And Dark Knight is not Dark Knight anymore. It's like Light Knight because this movie trailer, I mean, I had to like kind of look into my, I was like, what's going on here? Like, it was such a dark trailer. That being said, Matt Reeves is incredible. Can we react to it now? Are we reacting to the trailer now?
Sure. Yeah, we can.
Later on? Okay, Gabe. No,
oh,
it's
later
fine.
On we are? I couldn't remember. Right. I forgot we have a Fandom bit. Apologies. Yeah, we're getting to that. Yeah. Well, anyway, the Batman ended up winning, and we'll get to that on the other side of how about this interview. So I got a chance to sit down with Ed Solomon. As I mentioned, co-creator of the Bill and Ted franchise, we got to talk about Face the Music. It's spoiler-free, but that movie's coming out as of the time that we're dropping, and you guys will get a chance to see it in some select theaters. I know it's going to drive-ins, and it's going to be available on paid VOD.
What a great drive-in movie.
Yeah, it really is. It's a fun one to go see.
They should do a triple feature.
I wonder. That's what I was just going to say. If there's a way for them to sort of line it up, that'd be really fun.
Because drive-ins are generally two movies, right? Normally, right? It's like you get two, maybe you just do three.
Like, that's the whole point of the Grindhouse, right?
That'd be a fun night. Yeah, and the movies are, what, an hour and a half? Yeah,
it's kind of funny, too, because you could do the first one and the third one. Like, I like Bogus Journey a lot, but you don't need it for this third movie.
But don't you need it to know who Death is?
Oh, I guess you would. I guess you would. Do you know how long Face the Music is?
Hour and a half?
76 minutes.
Yes! Oh, yes! I'm loving this new world of short movies.
But, okay, they're short, and this is just over an hour.
Or there's Host that's 56 minutes.
We could always, I think that would be a really interesting discussion at one point, is when does it become a short film and when is it a feature? And I know there's...
The Academy says 40 minutes.
Okay, but like... If a movie was 65 minutes, is that a feature film?
It could, in theory, I go by the Academy rules. It could, in theory, win Best Picture, yes.
But do you think that's a feature film, 65 minutes?
I use the 40-minute marker as, like, I because then it gets into a gray area. Like,
so was Host a feature film for you?
Yeah. It would be like, in theory, if I would feel, I'm not saying it's going to be, but in theory, yeah, I would feel the right to put it on my top 10 list.
It felt like it.
Not to create another, like, you know, volume one, volume two. Ooh. We don't need another one of those feuds.
Don't we,
but
though?
Does this make every single HBO series a film franchise?
No, because it's the intent in which it's made. Don't.
Limited,
I'm
yeah.
kidding. I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Limited series. The person who's trying to get us to go to the interview just posed the question that was going to get us talking more before the interview.
Hey, we have fun. We have fun.
I know. I'm just kidding.
Wait, wait, Gabe, what shirt are you wearing? A Jurassic Park shirt?
Yes, he is.
So, yeah. Sean, why do you hate Spielberg?
Well, do I? I'm wearing Skywalker Ranch, where he audio mixes most of his films. So
I'm sorry. Is Skywalker Ranch the home of Steven Spielberg, or is it the home of George Lucas?
Well, when I went there, Jake, when I got to visit Skywalker Ranch with my child,
sure.
It reminded me of the home of George Lucas, because he has a home there,
right,
and a studio, and I got to hold the actual lightsaber that Luke used in New Hope.
Cool, so, cool. I'll be sure to you know, whenever I want to talk about the things that you love, I'll be sure to just do like Astros and Texans and Rockets.
Yeah,
since exactly. It is in direct correlation to what you love, because it was just a blanket.
Sean, at any point during the interview, do you say they should rename the Ed Sullivan Theater to the Ed Solomon Theater?
Here's Ed Solomon talking Bill and Ted Face the Music. There's a line specifically from the new movie that stood out to me when I heard it, where they say, maybe we should always not know what we're doing. And that struck me because in revisiting the two movies leading into the third one, I kind of wonder, like, what are Bill and Ted good at? Like, what are their strengths when you're sitting down to sort of plot them out and write dialogue for them?
What a great question. I've never gotten that question. They are good at, you know, how your GPS, when you pass an exit it meant you to take, or yeah, you turn in the wrong direction, it goes recalculating route. Bill and Ted feel things very deeply, but they're very good at recalculating their route,
okay,
and committing to move forward. They're also very good at seeing the good in people around them and to living committed to that. Mm-hmm. And they're very good at navigating through difficult situations where all hope is lost while continuing to have faith. So I would say those are things they're good at.
That's great. Yeah, they think on the fly, that's for sure.
They do. And Ted in particular, Ted is very good at coming up with a strange counterintuitive notion. And Bill is very good at taking that notion and putting it into actionable terms.
Right, right. And they don't get rattled. When we were revisiting Bogus Journey, my wife hadn't seen Excellent Adventure in a really long time. And so when the two evil Ted, evil Bill and evil Ted show up, she goes, aren't they fazed by the fact that they're looking at themselves? And I was like, no, that's happened to them before. They don't get rattled at all. They don't get fazed by stuff.
No, I love the way they call themselves, like, that you, your you is a dickweed. My you, I liked my me.
Yeah.
Strange casual verbiage about that with themselves. I know that is fun. And none of those are things we actually thought about. It just came about. And in hindsight, we go like, oh, it's funny how they talk to each other.
That's really funny. At the end of Bogus Journey, when they return with the two babies, were the babies ever boys? Were they always girls?
Well, look, I mean, I'd like to pretend they were always girls. They weren't always girls.
Right.
We assumed, because we were adolescent boys when we wrote Excellent Adventure, and we were barely adolescent, post-adolescent boys when we wrote Bogus Journey. Of course, we assumed they were going to be boys.
Right.
They happened to be played by girls, interestingly. Candace and Lauren Mead played those characters. But regardless, look, we were immature adolescent males, and so we wrote an immature adolescent male fantasy. 30 years pass, life changes, the world changes, we change, we grow up, we get married, we have children, we have sons, we have daughters. And of course, our culture evolves as it should. But we still, in 2009, 2010, we thought, let's write them as boys, because that's what we figured. Will and Theo, young Will and Theo. And I cannot tell you how boring they were.
Really? No kidding.
Oh God. Derivative. Stale. We try to give them like Bill and Ted like voices. It was just unbelievably like rehashed crap. We hated it.
Right. Right.
Tried to make them into cool guys. That was stupid. And then when we finally had the idea a few years later, wait, why? We're beating our heads against the wall with this. What if they had daughters? What if it's Billy and Thea? Just opened it up completely.
That's awesome.
Much better idea.
That's awesome. And
it helped us with something we were trying to do anyway with the movie, which is the first two movies, they are male-centric. They were written by boys who knew no better. Mm-hmm. And so this also gave us a chance to go, let's just widen it, man. Let's like, let there be more of a female presence and more, you know, just be, make it more inclusive.
Well, really. And I hope you take this the right way. This one had a lot more heart watching Face the Music.
I appreciate that. No, I feel that, you know, where it may not be as jokey as the first couple of movies and it has a different energy in that way. Mm. It's imbued with a lot of other layers that are just the product of all of us being older and trying to write it from a place of truth as to where we are now, as opposed to trying to dress them up as old Bill and Ted and just keep that going. In a way, I'm glad I didn't watch the first two movies before we started writing this one, because I think I would have tried to replicate those more.
Right.
So in a way, it gives this movie its own DNA. And I don't take that in the wrong direction. I mean, it does have more heart just because it's about more meaningful things.
Right.
And it's about sadness and it's about disillusionment and disappointment. Well, Chris and I were joking yesterday. We're saying, yeah, in a way, it's the feel-good movie about failure.
Right. Yeah. No, it does hang over them a lot over the course of this movie.
It's an absurd, silly, ridiculous comedy about dashed hopes, lost dreams, unfulfilled promises, and ultimately figuring out a way to find meaning and get your Bill and Ted-ness back.
Well, there's a lot of irony to the fact that you guys gave them this this destiny 30 years ago, and they've never been good at songwriting. It'd be like if someone told you were going to write the great American novel, but you can't write. How do you live up to that?
I wanted to write the great American novel. And I can't write the great American novel. So I know what that's like. And that was the impetus, which is what you just said, was the core impetus. We were told as teenagers that this was our destiny. We haven't been able to make it work. Hmm. What do we do? And how do you go on? And that's totally right. You're totally right.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that you didn't revisit the other ones, because so many sequels can just be recycled jokes. Or, hey, here's a familiar beat. Remember when this happened kind of thing. And I thought it was really deliberate that Face of Music doesn't do that. So is it that's the way you guys approached it? That was the design of it?
100%. We didn't want to go back. Honestly, we have our own internal governors working against us on that anyway. Mm-hmm. Anytime we hit something that we felt was derivative, you know, we kind of choked a little bit anyway. Mm-hmm. And I do, again, think that was probably, I guess it was an intuitively good choice. I don't know why I didn't go back and watch the first two. Mm. I'm not, in general, someone who likes to go watch earlier works anyway.
Right.
It never crossed my mind to watch the movies before we started this.
Well, you know these characters, though. You know them.
Yeah, on a gut level. But I've only seen Excellent Adventure a couple of times. I've only seen Bogus Journey a couple of times.
Right.
But yeah, we on an internal level, we do. And we never had to worry about like talking about biography or characteristics. We just jumped in feeling it.
Let me tell you the character that made me laugh so hard I actually had to pause my screener. Do you know who I'm going to tell? Who I'm going to say?
I'm going to guess, but I'll let you say it and I'll see if I'm right.
It's Dennis Caleb McCoy.
Yeah, that's who I figured. He was a revelation. I think Anthony Carrigan's performance was a true revelation. It was a character we loved, and Chris and I love writing these like dark, vicious villains who ultimately are just deeply insecure and want to be loved.
Right.
Always really fun to write. But Anthony took it to the next level in a way that cracked me up. I mean, a couple of my very favorite lines in the movies were in the movie were his ad libs, honestly.
Right. Yeah, it's a terrific character. I am really curious how quickly, now we know that the script changed a lot over the course of you guys working on it, but what's an element of the story that you fought to maintain, that no matter how much the script went through revisions and changed, that you said that this has to be an element of this sequel if we're ever going to pull it off?
The second act stayed closer to the final version than anything else, which is they're told they need this song. They feel like they must have written it because they told them in the future they had written it. They go, why don't we, if we have written it, we just must not have written it yet. Let's go into the future to when we have, steal it from ourselves, which gave us that It's a Wonderful Life, Christmas Carol, kind of more like Christmas Carol trajectory. That spine stayed.
Okay.
And their love for their wives, their love for their daughters stayed. We never wanted them to be fuck up parents. We never wanted them to have a bad marriage. And I think I think those are the things that were like always in it from beginning to end. We added death a little bit later. We added a lot of the beginning of the movie we played around with. The couple's therapy scene was always there from the beginning, but we took it out, put it in, took it out, put it in. And I'm glad we kept it in. The ending changed a lot. Our original ending in this movie was a very somber, very quiet one in our very first draft.
Really?
Very personal. Yeah. There was no reality coming unglued. It was Bill and Ted had, in an act of incredible hubris, 30 years ago, spent $100,000 to rent the Rose Bowl for their 30-year anniversary, assuming it would be just packed and they do the triumphant 30-year reunion tour or 30-year anniversary tour. And now it's getting close to then, and they've sold literally zero tickets because their career's tanked, but they still have to perform at the Rose Bowl or at least go there.
Okay.
So we had a scene where they go and try to get their money back from the Rose Bowl, and they're like, no, it's not possible. And we actually brought the movie to the end of the Rose Bowl, and it was empty, and no one was ever there, and they failed. They failed. Wow. Never came up with a song, and they go home. And then they just hear this music playing, and they realize it was never them. It was never them. It was their kids. And that was our original ending.
Okay.
But that felt too small. And if you look back at both movies, Bogus and Excellent Adventure, we had smaller endings that had to get reshot because audiences were like, come on, man, you just let us down. You build and build and build. And then like the first movie ended in a classroom instead of an auditorium. And the second movie ended in a smaller venue. I don't remember, but we reshot both endings. Okay. Both. So we said, let's be smart and know that we aren't going to necessarily be able to reshoot this ending or don't want to just reshoot it again.
Okay. What was it like writing a scene that included George Carlin for this movie?
Initially, we had a bigger scene. Initially, we had one of my favorite scenes in the movie, which was in the second act, when Bill and Ted are trying to figure out what the hell went wrong with us, they visited themselves at the Circle K on the night when their other selves arrived with George Carlin. And we had a whole scene where Ted interacted with young Ted and Bill and Ted interacted with George Carlin. And aside from the fact that we just didn't have the money, we had very little money to make the movie, so we couldn't actually afford to shoot that scene. And part of the reason we couldn't afford to shoot it was it cost so much money to do all the digital manipulation of George Carlin. And we thought to ourselves, is that really what we want to do? Do we really want to manipulate George? No, that felt weird.
Right.
Make it appear that the guys were interacting with him. That just didn't feel right. So we jettisoned the scene and we put George in the hologram as he is in this movie. So you see him for a moment. And then we named the emissary from the future, who was going to be a character based on like a Henry Rollins type character. It's like another kind of cool male. We were like, no, what are we doing? This movie needs to open up. It's his daughter. Of course it's his daughter. It's right. Kelly.
Right.
And George had a daughter named Kelly. So we named the character Kelly. And that felt like a much more, I don't know, truthful and on theme way to do it. And Kelly Carlin's in the movie. She's got a little cameo in the future.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to run out of time, but I have to ask really fast. As someone who loved Steve Vai, I was a huge Extreme fan, and you have Nuno Bettencourt playing in the first movie. Who's playing guitar in the second one? Who did you guys lean on in this one?
Oh, you know what? I don't know the answer. No. I actually don't know the answer. I'm sorry to say. I wish I did know. I'm sorry. They're great. I wish I knew who it was. I'm so sorry I don't know that.
All right. Well, then I'll try one last one then. It's just really funny with time travel movies. They often get a fan base that just sort of picks them apart and analyzes every element of it. Your franchise gets a pass on stuff. People just sort of accept the rules of Bill and Ted. Do you have any idea why you think that is?
I don't know, but I'm going to read you a tweet that happened this morning. It's so funny. Somebody sent me something from, an article from Parade.
Okay.
And they have a section called Cinema Sins. Mm-hmm. And it says, the movie experts at Cinema Sins find some excellent boo-boos in Bill and Ted. Napoleon enjoys ice cream for the first time in his life. In reality, the French, Beethoven plays a piano that wasn't invented. Greece, go through these things.
Yeah.
And my response, which I tweeted, was, but everything else in this movie about time traveling teenagers who always somehow land exactly next to a famous person is apparently 100% accurate. It's the strangest thing when people try to say, like, well, that wouldn't have happened in Greece. In Greece, the statues weren't really white. And I'm like, none of this makes sense.
Right.
We actually almost led off the movie with a title that just said, this movie makes no sense.
Well, I saw that in your notes. Did you guys have that in your notes one time?
Yeah.
That's so funny. All right. And listen, man, thank you so much for taking the time. I thought this was a blast. I had a really fun time and I love seeing them together. And I'm so glad you were able to come on the Real Blind Podcast.
I'm thrilled to get to be on it. Thanks for having me. Any other time you want me, let me know.
Okay. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Cool. Take care. Thank you very much.
We want to thank Ed Solomon for coming by the Real Blind Podcast. That was a lot of fun to talk with him. I've been a fan of Bill and Ted, those two films leading up to it. And it's great to see them back in Face the Music. So make sure that you guys are able to check that out now that it's on paid VOD or potentially in a theater near you.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay, talking points. So we were talking about the DC fandom bits and we were jumping ahead of the curve, the Batman trailer. It's been interesting to see the marketing for this, too, because if you guys remember, we got that really quick shot of the up close cowl with the really red saturated background. Now we get a trailer and Matt Reeves is talking about the fact during this panel that they've only filmed a quarter of the movie and essentially had to shut down because of COVID. And the movie looks that good with just shooting a quarter of it. But we were recording a reaction video on Cinema Blend after Fandom, and at the end of it, I reminded everybody that it's not coming out until October of 2021. So, like, we can get excited about it now and talk about how good it looks, but damn, that's a really long way. Yeah.
I think part of it, too, is that felt like a full trailer rather than like it had been one thing if it had just been a quick 30-second teaser, and that almost would be a reminder of, like, yeah, we got to, like, it's cool to get a clip, but we got a ways to go. That felt like the kind of trailer that comes as a studio is getting ready to release a film.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, because it's not even done filming yet. Like,
right.
So I think that's why I keep having to remind myself of how far we have to go before it comes out.
The one thing the trailer confirmed for me was the Batman voice is awesome. Like it sounds amazing. It sounds like Pattinson's voice, but with just a little bit of
what did he say other than I'm vengeance?
I'm vengeance. No, that's I just, it, but you can still hear his voice though. Like, I mean, if that was Bale would have been like, I'm vengeance. I mean, like, but you know what I mean? Like, it would have been like a different.
I just feel like it's we're jumping the gun a little bit to assume what the.
No, I do,
but I just think it's to say, to use two words to say that, like, oh, that's exactly
that's
what
his voice.
You know? Do you think it would still sound cool, though, if he said, so that's how it feels?
Oh, my God. What if you.
I like Dark Knight Rises. Thank you very much.
What if at one point, like, he, like, after he beats down that bad guy, which is one of the coolest things ever, like, he's like, I am wearing hockey pads this time.
Okay, this is gonna tick off Kevin. I like Dark Knight Rises better than Interstellar.
Oh my God.
All right, thanks everybody. Appreciate it.
Oh,
the show is over.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
All right, later on, Kev.
Well, the show's about to get a lot shorter because Kevin's gone.
Let's cut to Wonder Woman 1984.
Jake, you can't say that with a straight face.
True story. Come on, man.
I love you.
If you said you got to put on one of them and watch it, I'd say Dark Knight Rises far and away.
Dude, even I can't say that. I don't really like it.
Well, you also think Kill Bill's two movies, so you're wrong.
Why is it so hostile today? We're being so mean to each other.
It is really. We've had a lot of stuff going behind the scenes.
It's been a day.
And we're taking it out on each other.
It's been an emotional day.
And we can't tell you why.
I know. I'm going to say something about Wonder Woman 1984 while we transition to that trailer.
Oh, Sean.
Sir?
I'm sorry. We have to mention the Nirvana track and the Giacchino score. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I just have to say that because something
great
in a way,
song choice.
Wait. There have been two trailers that come out recently with a Nirvana song in it. What was the other one? There was another one that had a Nirvana song. I'll look it up in a second. Gabe, I don't know if you can look that up, but there was another trailer that came out recently that used a Nirvana track. It was like a recent.
So is that where we are now? Where we're using moody '90s.
It's where we are now. Entertain us.
Wait, no. But that was the song that they used in the trailer, I think. Not the Batman one, but the other one you're talking about.
Yes.
I think it was Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I think so.
You just did that.
Sounds right.
Two.
But that seems on target,
yeah.
20 years ago. You know,
yeah.
That seems on target for cyclical pop culture.
But isn't the movie takes place in the 90s, correct, Sean?
Did they define it?
Did I read that somewhere?
Someone was saying, I think as a genre, that it's like a 70s crime thriller. You might have been reading
okay.
that. Okay.
But I do want to just shout out Giacchino because because Sean was texting over the weekend, the way that the transition from the Nirvana track, Something in the Way, into the elements of the score, Giacchino's score, is very cool. And I thought that once that logo popped up in the red and that note, and you hear what Giacchino is about to bring to that franchise, I am so excited. I mean, I love the work that, you know, Zimmer and Junkie XL did with Snyder's stuff, but I cannot wait to hear what Giacchino does.
There's music over the logo?
Yeah.
I thought it was the sound of the duct tape.
No, there's like at the end of the clip.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the Warner Brothers logo.
Sorry.
So here's my controversial take. I'm sure Wonder Woman 1984 is going to be good. I haven't seen anything yet in the marketing that has really got me hyped up about seeing it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it looks like sort of the standard superhero sequel.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough about the character Cheetah to know what she's supposed to look like in relation to the comic books.
Right.
But I would have loved if they had found a way to make it less CGI. Especially coming off of Batman, which looks, and granted, it's only 25% of the film, but just looks like it's going to be so as practical as possible. And then you turn around and see Wonder Woman, which just looks like a fun popcorn, but like just honestly CGI fest.
Now, I do want to shout out Patty Jenkins only because and no one here is saying that she's not a great director. We're just referring to the second trailer. But I have a lot of faith in her, especially after what she delivered with the first Wonder Woman. I thought it was an incredible film, except for the third act, which was a little bit more CGI heavy, as we were just discussing. But one thing I noticed in the trailer, and this is maybe it have already been confirmed, I just didn't know it until I saw the new trailer. So they're basically doing the reversal of the first one. So in the first one, Chris Pine's character helps her integrate into the real world, right? It helps her become. So in this one, it seems like she's doing that for him, right? If you watch the trailer, she's teaching him about the world they're living in now because he's been gone for that long. And I'm like, are they just reversing the bit? Because to me, what made the first Wonder Woman so awesome, besides the action, was their relationship. Like, the reason I, like, my favorite scene in the first Wonder Woman film is on the boat when they're going to, when they're leaving and going to
No Man's Land?
Yeah, more than No Man's Land.
Only, here's why. I love the No Man's Land scene. I think it's just an obvious visual, amazing sequence. I just loved what they built in that scene. And just the vulnerability, the softness of that scene. And I think that scene is so pivotal to why you care at the end of the film. Like, they're implanting that in your mind. So I just got a sense in this new trailer that they were reversing that whole bit. Oh,
they're Rush Hour 2-ing it.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't even pick up on that. You're right. There's the moment in the first one where, like, she eats ice cream for the first time.
Right.
And now in this one, he's like trying on 80s clothes.
Right.
Like, at the fish out of water.
It's the same interesting bit.
I never thought about that.
But speaking of Patty Jenkins, she did shoot this film on film, but with 65mm IMAX cameras, same cameras that Nolan uses for Tenet and Dunkirk and all that stuff. So you're going to have full blown like 70mm IMAX shots. And I think that, again, I'm not saying that makes the film better from a storytelling standpoint. I just think that this film is going to be bigger than we think it is and better than we think it is. But I agree with you. The trailer, while it did have some cool action, it did nothing in that trailer said to me that this sequel needed to be made besides a money decision. But
not yet.
It's a trailer. So
yeah, we'll see what happens.
It looks cool. I mean, I'm excited. Of course.
Let's shift gears into my favorite topic ever. The Snyder Cut trailer. And if you want to watch a grown man cry, head on over to the YouTube channel, the Cinema Blend YouTube channel, and you can watch my reaction to the Snyder Cut trailer. And it was about as raw as you could imagine. And I was literally not anticipating it to hit me the way that it did. And it was just, so Zach chooses the song and he uses Alleluia. And obviously he used it in Watchmen during the lovemaking scene. But you learn after the fact, I did not know this when he used it. I thought in the moment, without even knowing the backstory, I thought in the moment that it actually worked really well for the images that he was choosing to show. My first subtle reaction to it was, he's just so happy to be able to come back to this project.
It's a dueling meaning. It means that. It means what you just said, but it also means what you're getting to.
But then you learn after the fact that obviously the reason he left Justice League in the first place was because his daughter Autumn died from suicide, and this was a song that was very important to her. So he ends up using it. But now I've even seen someone went through and broke down the lyrics, each of the lyrics from the song and the images that he chose to show mirror the lyrics.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, extremely well.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I wish I knew whose Twitter account has it, but they have a thread where they take off each two lines of the song, and the imagery mirrors it perfectly. So it was just the culmination of seeing this footage realized. It's too much to even wrap my brain around, because this has been, and again, this has been a 3-year fight by Snyder's fans to get this cut released. They found out on May 20th that they're going to do it. Everyone who's listening to this, like, by this point, likely knows that I've taken this project on to tell their story. But I didn't know how invested in it I've actually become. Like, to see it happening and to see, in order to write the book, I've been immersed in the theatrical cut. And it's such a bad movie. So to see good versions of scenes that somewhat exist in another movie, but like shown better. And Kevin takes this stance all the time of just like when an actual filmmaker shoots, like you just see Zach putting his art forward. And it was too much. It was overwhelming. I loved it. What did you guys think of the trailer?
I thought it looked great, though I will say I want to start doing reaction videos to your reaction videos where I react to how you're reacting, because loved watching that video so much. If you haven't seen it, it's doing very well.
Well, of course it is.
Okay, well, that moment's ruined. I thought it honestly looked great. I'm kind of like, I'm in, you know, like I was sort of sold and it sort of solidified that like, he's back making the project he wants. I've only seen the Joss Whedon theatrical Justice League once. Ooh. So I don't have enough of a memory to really compare it.
I think it's on HBO.
Yeah, or I think it's on HBO Max. Or like, yeah, I don't really particularly want to. I mean, I hated it. I don't know if you ever saw my review, but it was not good. But
did you do the junket? I know Kevin.
No, that was, I did, there were, not to get too in the weeds, there were a couple of junkets in London, and then there were a couple of junkets in LA. I did the ones in LA.
Gotcha.
And then our other correspondent did it, that one. But I think it looks great, and I'm sold, and I'm just really happy that it exists.
Yep. So, Sean, I have some questions, because you're obviously very knowledgeable on this. It's funny, like, the other day, this was actually this was a while ago, but I remember being in a car with, this must have been before the pandemic now that I'm thinking about it. I was driving home from somewhere, and you and I got on a phone call together and talked for like an hour. I might have been driving home from my parents, like in February, I think it was. It was the Kevin Smith thing. Oh, and nice. We're driving home together, and you were just waxing poetic about the Snyder Cut. Mm-hmm. And like Lauren is sitting in the passenger seat going, damn, he knows so much. And also like you make it interesting for people who don't know about it. Mm-hmm. Like the beauty of what we do and the business that we're in is when you're passionate about something, people will be passionate with you, even if they're not interested in it, because they get attracted to somebody who's passionate about something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And so you're my source for any questions I have. So this film was shot 35. Now, the one thing I find interesting about it is this. Batman vs. Superman was shot on multiple formats. You had 65 millimeter IMAX cameras. You had 65 millimeter regular cameras. You had 35 millimeter cameras. You had a GoPro shot at one point in the film. It was all over the place. But I had the chance to see that in the 1/4:3, the gigantic 70 mil IMAX projection, and it was glorious. I mean, obviously, you know, some of the most memorable shots were their fight when he pops to full IMAX, the funeral scene pops to full IMAX. No, yeah, at BBS. Mm-hmm. So I guess I am interested in knowing, he shoots Justice League on 35.
Right.
Now, before everything went down and before he left the project, he clearly made a decision to shoot 35 millimeter.
Yeah.
So why did he not continue with the big format as he did with BVS when he's making the arguably the biggest of the movies?
That's a great question. I don't really know, to be honest with you. He's maintaining some sort of aspect ratio when it goes to HBO Max that allows it to capture what you would see in an IMAX format.
Right.
But so he's got to condense it down for television sets.
It's a 1/3:3, which is also a 4/3 ratio. So 4/3, 1/3:3. It's the same. If people who haven't seen the Charlie Kaufman movie, it comes out September 4th. I'm thinking of ending things. It's shot in 1/3:3. It's the same exact ratio Snyder used, meaning you have black bars in the left and right side of the screen. And like you said, Sean, it's a wider, taller image.
It's taller, but, yeah.
And so I did find that to be a very fascinating thing as I watched the trailer. I was watching scenes and noticing how deep everything looked, because what it does is it condenses down to, like, I'm thinking of ending things. The reason it's used there is for claustrophobia, right? Mm-hmm. Charlie Kaufman wants you to feel claustrophobic while you're riding in the car with these characters. That's the point of using that. But Snyder, I don't think it is a claustrophobic thing. I think it has to do with what you said is the tallness of the image. I'm just interested in knowing when you found out that it was in that aspect ratio, because the film that we saw in theaters, which did have Snyder's footage in it, was full widescreen. I would assume 2/3:9 or whatever it would be. It was a widescreen format. So he clearly still shot with the widescreen. It's as if he's saying, oh, I want to condense it for television.
And I didn't know that until just a couple of days before he put the new trailer out.
That was shocking to me. Yeah, like,
that was genuine.
So the whole movie is going to look like that?
All 4 hours is going to be 1/3:3.
I think so.
Which is a very, very, very weird and bold decision for a superhero film.
Do you know what it looks like to me? They look like portraits. It almost has a portrait aspect to it. I'm going to use the scene in particular with Aquaman walking out onto the pier and he's taking his shirt off. And the way that I've seen the Comic-Con trailer 1,000 times.
Wide.
And you see him drinking as he's throwing the bottle and the waves crashing over him. And it's a traditional wide. Now it's this taller sort of, like, the way that it's framed now puts you more into the story. I
kind of want to know, I don't know if this has been answered. Has he talked about So the reason he's using the 1:3:3 is the 4:3, which is the box format, is to have a taller image and preserve that kind of ratio. Yeah. But I want to know, again, I know you don't know this yet because we haven't asked him this question, but I really want to know when he made the decision. Was it a decision because it's on television? Because that's a really strange, that would be like Avengers coming out in 4:3. That's kind of, but again, we're not, again, we haven't seen all 4 hours. I have no idea, but IMDb has it listed as 4:3. The entire trailer was 4:3. And so I don't know.
He should come on and explain it to us. Is that weird? That'd
be great. Gabe, you're a cinematography person. You're big in, sure. Because you went to school for it. You know about shots. Yeah. Is that strange?
It is. I didn't know it was supposed to be like that. I thought that was just like a creative choice for the trailer. Because even with it being for TV, doesn't really like,
I know,
make a difference, because everyone has widescreen TVs. Like, there are no like square TVs anymore.
It's like he took the image.
It's not like it's like a. Yeah. So I don't know. It's weird. I thought it was just a creative choice for like the tone of the trailer and.
Well, there's a scene in particular.
To set the difference between everything else that's coming.
There's a scene in particular where Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and Cyborg are on a platform and they're about to head into battle, and they show you what it looks like in the theatrical cut, and then they show you what it looks like in his. And it just, and for people who aren't watching the YouTube, it blows it up this much to show you that much more of the ship that's behind them that they're on. And it to me opens the world up more for them. So, I mean, I trust his judgment that he's picking this visual aspect.
Yeah. I guess what I find,
it'll be strange to see on a widescreen TV though.
That's my concern too.
4:3.
Yeah. I think what I find fascinating about the decision is this. So what you're basically telling me is if he shot it, obviously the movie was shot, so the footage is there, we're seeing it, so he clearly has there clearly is stuff on that side, like it's, he filmed it with the wide, unless it was somehow digitally squashed, which I don't know how they would even pull that off, but basically what's happened here,
no I'm sure it's all wide.
Okay, so that means he must have shot it on a very large aspect ratio, because if he's getting top to bottom of the screen in that's a big deal. I would imagine, unless he blew it up, I don't know.
I also think that he's eventually planning. So he's going to do it in 4 1-hour episodes, but he's also going to have a complete assemblage cut.
Oh, cool. That's what that makes me happy.
So you get your choice.
Oh, you will eventually get your choice.
Okay. Yes. Are you? I like the episodes.
I want to watch it as a movie.
I like both. Well, but here's the thing. I don't know this much. I don't know if they're both going to arrive at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
I think he has said after the 4 episodes run, he'll have a complete package for everybody to almost, well, first off, to own, like a DVD or a steelbook or something like that people could put on their shelves. But I think he's going to have the ability. He's going to also complete a cut that is the full 4 things together.
All right, I'm going to put this last question out into the universe. I know we don't have answers to it, but I just want to put it out there, because maybe eventually if you talk to him at some point, I would love to know this. When he initially made Justice League, was it supposed to come out in theaters in that format?
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, that would have been unprecedented to see a massive.
I don't think it would.
So you think it was an HBO Max type of choice, meaning that it was, okay, this is going to be in people's homes. Let's give them a tall image versus a wide image.
Sure, because if you looked at the trailers that he did release when it was still his movie, they look normal. And I'm sure that it was going to be released in those different formats.
It's fascinating. So. And I did want to say one more thing. We don't know 100%. For sure, if the whole movie looks like that, right? Are we just assuming that? Because I mean, that the trailer looks like that. The IMDb says it's going to be 4:3, 1:3:3. I just assume that going forward.
He's confirmed anything about the entire thing.
I mean,
maybe because it won't transition. The transition won't pop the way there was if it was on a big screen. Is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I would be really surprised if it sticks that way.
I think it is going to stick that way.
So I don't know, man. I
think it is. I
think of the general audience looking at that is going to be,
I know,
confused more than anything.
Sean, didn't we talk about this? That's the format he's using. I think he commented on that, right?
But I kind of love it. Like every time I go back to rewatch that trailer, I kind of love the amount of space that it
contains.
I find it
strange, but I am intrigued.
Well. Speaking of,
maybe he thought he was cutting it for Quibi. You know, he needed the phones.
It's so weird. Like, I just feel like we came so far. Like we all used to have square TVs.
Yeah.
And it was such a big deal for filmmakers to be like, no, like get a widescreen TV because it more matches. And now we're like going the opposite direction. Now we're going back.
Snyder's taking us back.
We're going backwards. We all gotta go buy square TVs again?
Yeah, Snyder right. cut off, Snyder cut frame.
Snyder's cutting my patience.
Speaking of strange and abnormal, let's transition to spoiler-free Tenet thoughts, which is going to be a weird topic for us to dance around because we do not, under any circumstances, want to spoil this movie for anybody. And again, it's one of those, it's a difficult movie to spoil.
Yes.
But that being said, we are extremely aware of the fact that people going into this movie want to be as in the dark as possible. Nolan is obviously extremely intricate with the way that he lays out his stories. But the three of us were lucky enough to see it. Now, Gabe, do we want to talk about at the onset of how we, with theaters and returning or?
Yeah, I can cover that. I basically just want to say that, like, because movies like this are going to keep coming out, it seems, and because it's not a, you know, ubiquitous thing as far as theaters being open everywhere, we are going to be mindful of that moving forward of, you know, not flippantly throwing Tenet stuff out. We're going to keep this stuff contained so that if you want to avoid it, you can avoid it, but you can still enjoy the rest of the show because, you know, if you live somewhere that's not going to have a theater for X amount of days or you're not comfortable, you can make that decision and still enjoy the show. So we're going to do spoiler-free this week. Anybody can listen to it, totally spoiler-free. If you don't want to know anything about it, you know, you can skip this segment. Next week, we'll do a spoiler talk on it, but we'll have it very clearly laid out of when we're going to do that. And then we'll kind of leave that there for you guys to visit, and we'll be sure not to touch on that stuff moving forward, just because it's so sporadic of who is comfortable going to a theater and who will be able to go in general. So,
and it's also worth admitting and being transparent in that myself, Kevin, and Sean, our screening experiences are not reflective of what the average moviegoer's experience is going to look like. We were all very fortunate to have screenings set up for us. Either in our hometown. Sean had a whole circumstance. But we were all very fortunate to have screenings set up for us that had very few to no other people in it. And, you know, we're very lucky in that way. So I think it would be dishonest to not be transparent about that and just openly admit that, like, we recognize that our circumstances seeing it are not the circumstances that those of you at home are going to have if you live in an area in which theaters are open.
Yeah, right. And I also want to say that, you know, when we review this film, there's going to be excitement coming out of our mouths. And I don't want that excitement to make it seem like, oh, you need to rush out and go right away. Because if your threshold is you don't feel safe going to a theater, that's totally fine. My mom and dad will not go to a movie theater. I'll tell you a quick story and to go with this. My parents came to visit me last weekend. I was going to see the Inception 20th anniversary showing the night before they came to the house, and my mom called me and said, can you please not go to that before we come over, because we're not comfortable, we'd just rather you go next week, because that way
good for them for being honest.
Yeah, and it was, I think that's very fair.
And and I said, great, cool. And that's the thing,
Kevin,
like,
said tough shit, I'm going.
No,
come next week.
But it was one of those weird things where we have to understand that everybody has their own threshold of. So I have two of my best friends from college. Their names are Josh and Sean. One of them is on the fence. We might go see Tenet together in September. The other one, hell no, he is not going to a theater. And we're on a call last night together as friends, and I'm like, dude, man, I understand. I was like, I mean, I really would love for you to come see it with us, but I'm not gonna make fun of you for not going. So while you will sense excitement from us, that's just the general movie. We're not talking about it at all within the time frame we are living in. And that's the thing. I think it's very important, by the way. And I think I'm seeing this a lot in the press. This film does not exist in the pandemic world. What I mean by that is the film was made prior to the pandemic. And I think the film should be talked about as if it's the movie that Chris Nolan made and not the idea of, like, oh, it's going to be this, and this, and this. And I get that we're in the times. It's about going to theaters. Totally get that. But my thoughts on the movie are coming from a perspective of just watching the film and not thinking about the world right now. It's just the film.
So before we get to our reactions, I got to tell up my story about what happened to me yesterday, because this was, and again, listen, the first world of most first world problems anyone could ever have. But in the moment, it was really frustrating. I'm in North Carolina. North Carolina theaters are not open yet. They won't be open until September 11th at the earliest. That's when our governor is going to determine whether moving on to the next phase. South Carolina, the Wild West. They're doing whatever they want down there. Their theaters are open. Which is strange because their numbers are worse than North Carolina, but they're like, what the heck, we're going to open anyway. So Warner Brothers, extremely gracious, willing to set up a screening for me in Greenville, South Carolina. I don't think that they realize that Greenville, South Carolina is not that close to Charlotte, but like to them, like it's the Carolinas, so he can get there. And again, I didn't mind. It's 90 minutes away. I was happy to get there. They told me 10 a.m. screening Wednesday. I was like, excellent, I'm there. So got up with Michelle when she was ready to go to school. I left work I left for the theater at 8 o'clock, got there at 9:30 for my 10 o'clock screening. And as soon as I was pulling up, I get a call from the rep who's going to be meeting there. And she says, well, slight hiccup. The digital file, Kev, not to give you the heebie-jeebies. The digital file that's supposed to be coming hasn't arrived yet. So apparently what I've learned over the course of the time is that there are two ways that you can get a movie to a theater at this point now. If it's not Reels of Film, which, because I'm not quite sure where Reels of Film exists anymore, they can satellite beam it
Chicago,
down to your location.
The theater I saw it in was Reels of Film.
Awesome. That's great. That's fantastic. they can satellite beam it to you, or they can send a digital file that then gets, and I heard this word a lot yesterday, ingested. It gets ingested into the system. That wasn't there yet. It was going to arrive by 10:30. So the manager said, usually takes about an hour for a movie to ingest. And then from that point on, we're rolling. So they
said,
why
didn't you tell them just to invert the ingest?
I felt like they were inverting my entire day.
They could have, you could have watched the film as it inverted.
Might as well. So I went and got coffee. I was waiting for the 11:30 screen time to start back up. And then I got a phone call from the rep, and the manager said, yeah, that hour-long file is actually going to take somewhere between 3 to 6 hours.
Ugh.
Three to six hours. So looking at about 4:30 now at this point, on the low end, looking at 6:30 on the high end. And the Warner Brothers rep is like, okay, what if we just said 7 o'clock tonight and you can go home and come back? And I was like, I'm not going home and coming back again. The Carolinas, they're big. They're really big. I can't just go home and come back. So I said, cool, I'll tough it out. And this is where the day started to turn a little bit in my favor. The manager was just like, well, what do you want to go see? And I was like, what do you got? And he rattled down all the titles. And in addition to the Cutthroat Cities and the Unhingeds of the world, they were doing all this retro programming. And he was like, I got Black Panther starting in 10 minutes. And I was like, all right, game on. I'll go watch Black Panther. So my first official movie back to theaters ended up being Black Panther. I had that entire theater myself. And the whole time I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm digging it, having a really good time with it. But I'm thinking, like, I hope I come out of here and they tell me the tenant's ready to go. Like, I hope that the file, you know, you're downloading a file and it says like 5 hours. And then all of a sudden it's like 90 minutes and you're moving it along. So I come out and the guy's like, yeah, still looks like about 6:45, 7 o'clock tonight. You're gonna be ready to go. And now it's like 12:15. And I was like, come on, I'm dying. He goes, all right, what do you want to go see? All right, I'm going to go see Empire Strikes Back. And so I turned it into a little mini film festival. It ended up being pretty cool. And then what I will do is I'll transition that into, I waited 9 hours to see Tenet, and I would have waited 9 additional hours to see it, because it is so worth it. It's so worth it. It's Nolan at his most Nolan-y in the best way possible. You can read my review I put up on Cinema Blend right now. It is relatively spoiler free. I gave it 5 stars. There's one thing I wanted to sort of ding it for, and this isn't spoiling much of anything, but we'll talk about, I'm sure, the audio mix. Christopher Nolan and his audio mixes can be complicated. I had a really hard time with Interstellar. When I saw Interstellar in the theater, all of the stuff that he has going on over the course of the movie often drowns out dialogue. Before we even started recording, we were talking about Bane and the issues that they had with him.
And Sean, and just real fast, that's yeah, a story that not, I mean, people remember it happening, but the prologue came out for Dark Knight Rises. People, yes, couldn't understand what Bane was saying through the mask. And then
it
Nolan
was the, specifically, it was the scene in the airplane.
It was the
he
prologue.
Showed the entire airplane
the
scene.
Yeah, it was the beginning.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yes. And right, people couldn't understand anything that Tom Hardy was saying.
And then he
the
went
mask.
Back and fixed it, didn't he?
He went back and did ADR. I think he ADR'd every Bane line, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he definitely changed it. Like, we know that he fixed it to make it sound. It's noticeably different. It actually sounds kind of cartoony.
It sounds a little bit cartoony.
I like it.
So all that being said, it is, it's Nolan doing a spy movie. It's Nolan doing global espionage, essentially.
It's Nolan doing Terminator.
It's a lot. It's a little bit of Nolan doing Terminator. A lot bit of Nolan doing Terminator. But I thought it was incredibly smart. I thought it was incredibly brilliant. And the way that the screenplay structured it out, I thought John David Washington was incredible in the lead. I thought Brana was incredible. Yeah, cast is great. The set pieces are incredible. It's everything that you want a Nolan movie to be. To me, it delivered on almost every level. And it's one of those movies where even if you've watched every trailer and paid attention to every single thing that's going on, you're still really just... Kevin keeps saying it. He says, we're not ready. Your mind is not ready for where this movie takes you.
I've been joking about that, but I've been serious. I remember I spoke to Kenneth Branagh for Artemis Fowl, and the way he described the way Nolan works is that as if Nolan sees the world in time. And, you know, it sounds kind of an exaggeratory thing to say, but I say we're not ready because I do think we are living in a time period where we are witnessing our Hitchcock, our Kubrick. And we're very lucky to be living through a filmmaker like this, a person who is genuinely going back to the past to change the future of filmmaking, ironically. And so you think about the structure of this film. It's a movie that makes you work. You have to work. And that's the beauty of Nolan. You can't sit there and shove popcorn in your mouth and just kind of lay back. You're in it. He's immersing you. He's grabbing you by the throat and pulling you into these images. Everything on screen is tangible. You can touch everything. You could put your hand on that screen and grab everything. And I think yesterday was a really special day for me and for us. And I want to talk about it from that perspective real quickly, because yesterday was the first day I returned to a film theater to see a movie in a theater. I wore a mask the whole time, which was a little strange. It was hard to breathe sometimes, and it gave me a little more respect for people who have to wear masks all day for their job. My brother-in-law sells cars, and he hasn't had a break this entire pandemic, and he's working 94 degree heat with a mask on. It just gave me perspective, right? But yesterday, I've just been going through a tough mental time just in general. But yesterday, I just kind of felt right again. And I'll tell you why. Like, there's the beauty of what we all do and why we all love what we do. And the reason this whole show started was that you leave a film like that and then you just talk for 2 hours about every single intricate detail of the movie. And last night, we all hopped on a phone call for 2 hours and unraveled the whole film, literally from start to finish. We all walked through it bit by bit.
So I left Greenville, South Carolina, and talked to these guys until I pulled into my driveway.
And we did the entire
drive.
And to tell you the truth, it was the happiest I've been in a long time. Because it reminded me why I love going to the cinema, but also it reminded me of when a movie hits that hard, that the conversations you can have with your friends is such a special thing. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I understood every aspect of this film. I don't think it's meant to be understood in the first viewing. It's in a good way. It's frustrating, if that makes sense, because there's so much going on, but that script is airtight. And as we approach certain things towards, you know, with the film, everything you had seen prior, it's all there. Everything is there. And your brain is just trying to piece it together like a puzzle as you're watching it. If you can envision like a brain being like shaken and trying to find its way back to normalcy, that's kind of how the film felt. I felt like my mind was just being blown for 2.5 hours.
Well, and I'll say that there's moments when the movie clicks. When I would be like, Nolan, how did you even write this? Dude, that it came together the way that it does.
If we have to understand, writing this script is already insane. But to pull it off visually with music and performances and edits and action is a whole nother level of insanity. This is hands down hands down, the largest scale film I have ever witnessed in my entire life. I'll tell you why. Everything is done in camera. There's not a single green screen being used. It is all real. Everything you're watching is real. The scale of this is absurd, to a point where, I mean, I've seen big films. I've, you know, Avengers Endgame, whatever you want to get into. And I think this, from a scale perspective, is the largest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen anything this large. Because again, it's a $205 million practical effects film. It's not a $205 million CGI fest. The IMAX shots are glorious, absolutely glorious. And a lot of it is IMAX. And I saw it in 1.90. I didn't see the 1.43 yet, which is the preferred format he shoots in. Either way, I still had the transition from 65 to IMAX. But regardless, his score, you know, Nolan works a lot with Hans Zimmer, and I've loved that relationship over the years. Loved it. You know, the D note he did for Joker, that little dissonant note, I mean, everything he did with Nolan and Dunkirk and everything. This was a fresh score. It felt fresh. It didn't feel like a Zimmer score. It felt like a different type of music. It was very, it moved. I also loved that all the songs in the trailers are actually in the movie. So sometimes you go watch a trailer like Inception, and there's a song on the Inception trailer called Mind Heists by a guy named Zach. I can't remember his name. That song didn't end up in Inception. And you know, if you watch a trailer so many times that you get used to the way the music hits in the trailer, and you want that, it. And
if you that want Pink it. Floyd song is not a New Mutants, I'm going to be really disappointed.
But my point is, though, is that all the emotions you've been feeling while watching these trailers since December of last year, with the music that you've had it with, is going to be there for you. And I think that's the coolest thing I've seen in a long time, was that I was like, oh, thank God he's using these beats and this music. And I know, Jake, I don't mean to keep going on this long. This is just a lot to say about it. But and we'll get into spoilers later. But it's an astounding cinematic achievement on a level that I don't fully comprehend. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I understood this film, because I didn't. We had a 2-hour long unraveling discussion last night that opened my eyes to things that I could not wait to go back to.
I had to explain it to these guys, essentially. I had to basically lay the story out for them.
Because Sean thinks
I would argue I had a fairly decent understanding of this movie. But thanks, Mister. I don't understand Inception.
I don't really.
Last thing I will say, if you thought Inception was confusing, I think Jake and I said this. I think it's the most.
Wait, leave things for me to say.
I said this too, but I didn't like take this from you. I said this. We both agreed on this. It's the most complicated film I've ever seen. And I'll let Jake go on that. But I think it's a good thing. It's a film that I'm seeing again on Monday, again on Wednesday, and again September 8th. And I have tickets for all of it. And I'm going to keep going and going and going. And I am going to unlock everything. I can't wait to get back in that theater and revisit what I experienced. And this is what I'll end on. Largest action set pieces I've ever seen. There's a coldness to the film that I think works in its benefit.
It's called Nolan.
It's Nolan. I've said this before on the show. Interstellar was the first movie that broke through emotionally for me as an audience member. For Nolan, it was the first time I ever cried in a Chris Nolan film. This is very cold, but in the best way possible.
I'll push back on that. I don't think that that's accurate, but I know what you're saying.
I will just say this, and I'll end, and then we'll go to Jake. It's a phenomenal achievement. That as I sit here right now, I don't feel comfortable reviewing it. I'm not giving it stars yet because I don't know how I feel 100%. I'm basically walking through my mindset after seeing it less than 24 hours ago. And I don't think we need to live in a society where we walk out of a film and immediately tweet a reaction. I felt so great yesterday leaving that theater, getting into a car and processing it on my 40-minute drive home. It was wonderful. I didn't have anything to tweet out. I was just, let me take this in. So I loved it, but I'm going again before I officially give my stars.
Jake, you hated it?
Yeah.
Ditto, I guess. Like,
all right, great. Let's move on. Yeah, what else?
No, I will say that I think I know. I'm with these guys, and that I absolutely loved it. It's actually my favorite movie so far this year. But I am prepared for pushback.
Yeah.
Because I think, and Sean disagrees, and we can get into this. I think that this is Nolan's least accessible film by far.
I agree.
I think, and I hate using this expression, but you know what I mean when I say this. I think general audiences are going to hate this movie. Mm. I think Inception, a lot of people keep asking me to compare it in terms of difficulty to understand. And here's, I do want to do a quick sidebar. I agree with Kevin, and it is one of the most difficult movies I've had to kind of piece together.
But it's fun I don't to piece
know.
It.
Sure, yeah. But my point is, I don't know how much of that is because of how complicated it truly is. Because I, at no point did I question what the characters were doing or their motivations as much as I did sort of the minute details. Mm. So I don't know how much of it comes from the complications of Nolan's script and how much of it comes from the fact that the sound mixing was so bad that I only understood about half of what the characters were saying. So I don't know, whenever I talk about how complicated it is, I don't know if I mean that as like, oh, prepare yourself because it's really layered, or just like, I couldn't understand what the fuck anybody was saying.
This is why earlier in the episode we were doing that, because Jake was making us laugh before we started the show. It's like, what's that?
What's that? What's that?
The sound mixing is something that we have had a lot of discussions about offline, and it's something that's been discussed in a lot of Nolan's films.
Yeah,
but this was really funny because Jake and I got on the phone last night right after we both saw it, and I called it one of Nolan's most accessible films.
And I think it is by far and away his least accessible film by
far. So
I mean,
funny.
I think you know, people ask me, well, like, you know, Inception was fairly complicated, and Inception looks like a coloring book compared to, like, walked out of Inception understanding it. Was it complicated, and did it ask you to really follow it? Yes, but I walked out of the theater the first time I saw it understanding it unquestionably 100%. I had no issue understanding Inception. Tenet, I think, and also there are a lot of really big ideas that it's difficult to wrap your head around. I'm not going to get into the details of them.
But
a lot of time-based ideas that go against what we perceive as time. And it's hard to both follow a complicated plot and try to wrap your brain around these very big ideas. It is a movie that whether you believe a movie should be allowed to do this or not, demands multiple viewings. But I do think that it challenges us. I do think it is an original, astonishing achievement. I don't know if it's complicated comes from the layered script or just from the lack of understanding of the dialogue. And I do, as much as we love it, I am prepared to go on the air, tell my morning show audience how much I love this movie, and I am prepared to receive backlash from people going, what the hell? Why did you send me to that? That was BS. I am prepared for that.
But when I think that
there's a difference between, like, and I'm trying to think of a good example to throw under the bus, like a Suspiria or an Upstream Color or something like that. When you refer general audiences to something like that, where they're just like, what am I watching here?
I said to my general audiences to see Inception. And I think the general audiences would say, like, yeah, it was complicated, but I loved it. It was great. I don't think we're going to get that same reaction from Tenet.
I'm willing to bet we will. I think that there's enough
willing
of
to bet we're. I'm willing to bet we won't.
Yeah.
I'm
to me, it's Jake. A smart James Bond movie. To me, it's a really intelligent Bond thriller.
Here's the thing. I will never fault a film for me not understanding it the first time I see it. I mean that, but to Jake's point, it is a very, very hard film to follow. Now, I don't necessarily find that to be a bad thing because I love piecing together his film. So for me, that works. But when I got home yesterday and Lauren was asking me how it was, I didn't really know what to say because I do think that people are going to have a hard time following the film. Now, does that, no pun intended, but I do think that this is a film that's going to require, I mean, we've all seen the stories. Didn't the actors didn't understand the script the first time they read it?
Pattinson came out and said that he still doesn't understand it.
John David Washington says you have to watch it, like, I mean, like, I'm paraphrasing, like, four or five times to get it. And yeah. I get that that could be a turnoff to some people. I totally
understand. Yeah, there are a lot of people that say I shouldn't have to see a movie four or five times.
Right, sure. Yeah. I do believe that. And I think a movie needs to work the first time.
Yeah.
I see. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that if a filmmaker has a tight enough script and he's taking you on a journey and there are things you're missing throughout that maybe he wants you to miss so that you go back and see them on the second viewing. I know sometimes people say, oh, it's a cop out to say, oh, you got to see it three times to fully get it. Jake put it brilliantly. I'm prepared for that backlash. I already know,
yeah,
based on what I experienced yesterday, that this is going to be a very hard film for audiences to follow. And I have watched every Nolan movie multiple times, and I had a really hard time following it, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at right now.
So we had a conversation before we started the show, and I'm just going to give you guys a little peek behind the curtain because of what we plan to do coming up. So we know that it's going to be a little while before most people get a chance to go see this film. And maybe it's not something that you could rush right out to go see. It might not even be available where you are. We do have international audiences who listen to us, and they've been asking us to sort of break it down. We're going to do an in-depth, spoilery conversation chat about Tenet, and hopefully we all get a chance to even go back and revisit it. Kevin, as you mentioned, said he's going to see it three more times.
And I'm going Monday, and when we do the show next week, I'll tell you if it was, because last night our 2-hour conversation unlocked so much for me. You know what I mean?
Is there a way I can go to a screening with closed captioning?
That would be helpful. It's not a joke. That would actually
No, I'm not joking. Don't they actually offer screenings with closed captioning?
I would love
to do that.
So we'll have that, and we're not sure if we're going to have it next week or the week after. We're going to wait a little bit for people to be able to have a chance to go see this, because we would love to talk in depth about it. And some people have asked us specifically to really drill down into it because we are such Nolan fans. But we're going to wait and give people the opportunity to hopefully go see it on the big screen in the safest way possible so that everyone feels comfortable. And then we're able to discuss the film in more detail.
Little cool thing. I was reading the press notes the other day, and this is such a nerdy thing, but the truck flip in Dark Knight, the gentleman who was in that truck flipping it, his name is Jim Wilkie, stuntman. He was the actual person that was Ledger, right? Because Ledger's in the truck when it flips, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Right. So he's the guy. He's the stuntman. Yeah, that's an amazing scene. I love when like Ledger just walks down the street, just firing the gun like violently to the
side. He's like stumbling around.
It's amazing. The reason I want to bring that up is because the same guy who flipped the truck in Dark Knight is the guy that helped crash the plane in Tenet.
Oh, really?
Apparently he had to go to some driving school. He's the guy that's towing the airplane.
That's
towards
cool.
the hangar. And then people out there, this is not a spoiler, it's in the trailers. But the story surrounding that is another reason why I want to highlight Nolan. Like, they ran the numbers on that whole thing, and it was cheaper for him to do that in camera with a real 747 and blow it up versus doing it with CGI and or miniatures. And I think the last thing I'll say about this film is I think this might be one of the most pivotal films that we've ever seen made in our lifetimes. And I'll tell you why. You're talking about a movie that shows you that you can do every insane thing in action, in camera, on the screen, right? And apparently some of it is cheaper than using CGI effects. Mm-hmm. Any filmmaker who watches Tenet and goes to make an action film and wants to rely on CGI when they could potentially do it in camera is going to have to check themselves now. Because
remember that most filmmakers are not getting the blank check that Nolan is getting.
That's where I disagree. If you go back and watch Memento, any film he made
prior... Memento and Tenet, he's not doing the same thing.
Hold on a second. There have been plenty of $200 million films that have been made for the same price Tenet was made with a ton of CGI. That's a cop-out thing, in my opinion, to say, oh, Nolan has a $200 million budget. There are $200 million films that are full CGI fests. We've seen
them. Sure, because there are things that just don't exist.
Gabriel?
I want to push back on that slightly, though, Kev, because you're saying like the other filmmakers will have to deal with that he did that. Hmm? Nolan had to get it, though. He had to get it in camera.
The benefit
of CGI is not just about the...
Where he wanted to.
Well, if he... No. He had to, in order to get the shot, he had to get it. I mean, he had to pull it off. CGI allows you to do different versions, to try different angles, to try different things. Filmmakers can just get more freedom with CGI. It's not just about it's cheaper or, you know, we can just do it in post. It is that, sure. But I push back on that because you can just try different things with visual effects versus Nolan had to figure it out, which is to his testament, to his credit. He had to figure it out. They had to storyboard it. They had to plan everything to a T. Then they had to hit record and do it. And he probably didn't have, you know, too many chances. That's great, but I don't think we should besmirch people moving forward.
Does Nolan storyboard?
Although it's practical, it's not.
I've never seen a Nolan storyboard. Everyone's storyboards leak. Have you guys ever seen Nolan storyboard?
I just saw that chalkboard where he just draws.
I've seen Dunkirk storyboard.
I was curious.
I want to clarify one thing I said. The movie has 280 VFX shots. It's not like there's not CGI in the film. There's CGI in the movie. The point I'm making is, like, okay, Avengers Endgame. You can't do that scene without CGI at the end. It's just not possible to have people flying around like that. I get that. So I want to clarify that I'm not saying that every filmmaker has to make practical action going forward. I'm saying that there are too many filmmakers out there right now that say, you know what? We'll just fix that in post. I think CGI should be a little button in the paint toolbox that you go to, like Gabe just said, to enhance or make something better.
Basically, and what Spielberg did with Jurassic Park.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. I had this exact conversation yesterday with somebody after I walked out of Tenet, because that's where CGI and practical effects merged.
He only used the CGI if he had to.
So my point being is that is the way, in my opinion, filmmaking should be done. If you can do it in camera, you should try and scale it out and do it. I have no problem with VFX artists. I think VFX artists are geniuses. I just don't think CGI should be relied upon if you can try to get it in camera. That's all I'm saying.
But two of my favorite movies of all time have an entire CGI character.
That's fine. I don't mind. I'm not saying I hate CGI. I'm just saying.
Brolin's brilliant. Brolin adds a lot to it.
Yeah.
You know, they rely on Brolin for that. Yeah, yeah. I totally understand.
You see where I'm coming from.
I can't say this, but I can say that there are huge set pieces in Tenet that if they used green screen would hit differently. That's all I'll say. They would hit differently. We're going to move on, because I don't want to give too much away. We're going to talk spoilers for that later on. The other movies that are opening this week in movies, unfortunately, I don't think we've seen. Some of them we have. The Personal History of David Copperfield. Did anybody see that?
We've seen it.
Oh, you guys saw that? How is it?
I really enjoyed it. I had never really read the book. I wasn't incredibly familiar. I did a little bit of research before the interviews. Was not aware that it is basically an autobiography of Charles Dickens.
Okay.
It's as close to like his personal story as you're ever going to get. It was much funnier than I expect. Like I found myself laughing out loud multiple times. Really an incredible like ensemble cast. It's one of those, like, I know you hate sort of this comparison or this idea, but like the Forrest Gump thing, where it's just this long journey of a person and like all the different characters he meets throughout his life. Dev Patel, I think, is really an incredible talent. I'm excited to see what he continues to do. Ever since Slumdog Millionaire, I've been sold on him. Really, I very much enjoyed it. I didn't really go into it with any sort of expectations. You know, I feel like a lot of times these Charles Dickens adaptations can be very sort of uptight and have a certain feel to them. And this one just really, I don't want to say it's modern because it still takes place within that time period, but its approach at humor and the way in which they tell the story makes it much more accessible, I think, than many Dickens adaptations in the past.
So the director has done a number of, like, his name is Armando Iannucci, and he wrote for Veep on HBO. He did a movie called In the Loop, and he did The Death of Stalin.
Yeah, he's got a great sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're really dark, black, usually political comedies. Yeah. And so I'm glad to hear that this one translated.
Big fan.
Then Bill and Ted Face the Music. So I saw Bill and Ted. You guys have not had a chance to see it yet. Oh, to talk to Ed Solomon. I don't want to talk too much about Bill and Ted. I want everybody to be able to experience it. The only thing I'll say is that it has way more heart than the other two installments. And in talking to Ed, as you guys heard in his interview, he candidly admits that the first two movies were written by very adolescent males. And it was interesting to go back and revisit the two movies before going into Face the Music. Bogus Journey in particular, the humor doesn't hold up. Like, what might have been funny back then is borderline insensitive now. And this movie strips away all of that. And one of the key decisions that Ed Solomon talked about in the interview was giving them daughters in place of when they come back from the very end of Bogus Journey. They go through time, they train themselves to play guitars, and when they come back to the main concert, they each have babies. And they introduce their babies to everybody, and they're like, this is baby Bill, and this is baby Ted, kind of thing. And I asked him, as you heard, were they always going to be girls? And he said, no, at the time we thought they'd be boys. And he goes, even when we wrote the screenplay a couple of times over the years, we gave them sons. And we tried to make them like, first they were super athletic, you know, anti-Bill and Ted. We kind of made them Bill and Ted replicas. And it, he goes, they were just never interesting. And so, you know, by opening it up and giving them daughters, it lent some more sort of compassion and heart to the screenplay. And it just, it feels different. It feels more mature, yet still funny. And I dug it. I really did dig it. I know that we're in a era where we are blowing the dust off of old franchises and trying our best to bring back some nostalgia edge. And especially if two actors are willing to step back into certain characters. I will say, and I know we've critiqued this with the trailer, Keanu in particular, the first 15 minutes of him playing Ted, it's rough. It just feels like he doesn't remember how to do it, which is very strange to say since he created the character. But you almost get the sense of like, does he want to do this? Kevin nailed it when he kind of said it's almost like they got an actor on SNL to do a Bill and Ted skit. But then there's a moment in the movie where he walks like Ted as they're sort of going. And then I was like, oh, now you got it. And then almost from that point on, it's pretty seamless. So if you're a fan of the first two, you're going to love it. Even if you're just a casual fan who wants to sort of check something out because you want to see what these two guys are doing, I think it has, again, more heart. I really like the two actresses who play their daughters. It's fun to see death back, and it has a great message. So I dug it. I totally recommend it. And again, as mentioned on this show, 76 minutes of your time, you know, clocking in as a tight 76 minutes. So where did the show notes go, Gabe?
Shorter than an episode of Real Blend.
By a long shot. New Mutants. New Mutants. This is kind of funny. Finally coming to theaters.
What'd you think of it, Sean?
Well, I'll see it tomorrow. And I'm still very excited for it. I love the New Mutants comic book. I'm rooting for Josh Boone. I would like this movie to work. It's ridiculous, the number of circumstances that have conspired against this movie. First off, it was made back when the X-Men still belonged to Fox. It was supposed to come out before Dark Phoenix. That's a movie that happened. Then the merger went through, Disney and Fox, and it kind of got lost in the shuffle. The Marvel Cinematic Universe would like to at some point use mutants, so it kind of wants to pretend that New Mutants doesn't exist. Then the movie got delayed, and then it got delayed again, and then it got delayed one more time. Then a global pandemic hit, and theaters shut down. And everybody kind of wondered, why isn't New Mutants going to Disney Plus? Like, Onward. No, Onward went to theaters, but then it came to Disney Plus really quickly. Mulan is going to Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. Oh, the one and only Ivan. Felt like New Mutants should have just sort of been put out of its misery and released to streaming. But now it's come to theaters and I will see it tomorrow. And so keep an eye on my social media and I'll post a reaction and I'll have a review on Cinema Blend. And if it's worthy, we'll talk about it next week. You guys have anything to add about the New Mutants coming to theaters?
I haven't seen I can't wait to see it. I'm seeing it Monday. I'm seeing Tenet at 1 and then I'm seeing that afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't wait. I'm excited to see it, to be honest with you. I think it looks cool.
I think it looks cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk about
it. Can we talk a little bit like behind the scenes?
Of course.
They didn't screen it for critics.
Right.
And true. They didn't offer links.
That's true. Yes. This
and
is
the
also
reasons
true.
That normally happens.
Yes.
Is because it's bad.
Well, yeah.
Are we concerned about that?
Sure. Of course. Absolutely. Especially because they did send out screening links for the one and only Ivan. Oh, well, Hamilton, they didn't send out screening links for Hamilton.
Right.
You had to do the junket without seeing it.
That's fair. Okay. Maybe that's just...
But I'm not trying to say that New Mutants is Hamilton by any stretch.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But I'm curious, because Sean mentioned it, like, there's the Marvel of it all that really doesn't want or need the New Mutants to exist. Right. So is there, instead of it being bad, is it maybe a good movie that they're just like, we need to get this out and move on as quick as possible. Is that a possibility?
Possible. You know what else happened from a Marvel standpoint?
Trying to keep my hopes up for New Mutants.
Which I find fairly interesting. So Disney released their updated slate today, and Black Widow's still on it for November. Like, I was having a conversation with Brandon Davis, our friend over at comicbook.com, and he was saying something that I actually believe too, that Black Widow holds on and opens in November. So we'll see. We'll see if that happens. All right, blend game. Let's get to that. Hashtag Octavia Spencer blend. I'm going to go first, and I was going to say that the movie that I was going to pick was Gifted, which is a really good movie that I think people sleep on. Solid Chris Evans film.
Wait, so this is not your pick?
It's not my pick because I don't think that I don't consider that an Octavia Spencer movie, essentially. I think she has a good supporting part in it, but I think it's largely a Chris Evans movie. So I'm going to go with Hidden Figures. Hidden Figures is a story I didn't know. We got to see it in Toronto when they had it as part of a promotional marketing event. It blew me away, the way that those actresses all came together, Janelle and Taraji, and then Octavia Spencer, all played off of each other really, really well. I learned a lot about that time period. I thought it was great the way that they all played off of each other, and their relationships were really, really strong. I thought it used Octavia Spencer to the best of her abilities. If I had to pick a film that I thought was my favorite of hers that was going to be into, I'm going to go with Hidden Figures. Jakey.
Great movie. I picked something that I didn't necessarily think I was going to, but I picked Loose.
Oh, which I haven't seen, but everybody raves about.
If you haven't seen it, just an incredible film, and probably her, not just her best performance, but her most layered, complicated, difficult to peg character. In a film full of complicated, layered, different, difficult to peg characters.
Can you tell me what the synopsis of that movie is? What is it even about?
So it is about a high school student, black high school student, who is adopted by two white parents.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes from sort of this war-torn country. And at one point, he was a young child soldier.
Okay.
And he Octavia Spencer plays his teacher, his high school teacher. And they kind of just butt heads about a lot of things. And I don't want to give too, than it gets.
That's enough, yeah.
It gets very complicated.
Okay.
And there are no easy answers, and it's not tied up easily into a bow. You're sort of left going like, okay, where do we go from here? Okay. It's like life. It doesn't just stop. But it's an incredible piece, an amazing performance on her part. Not an easy role to pull off by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, so that's my pick. And if you haven't seen it, an incredible film.
Kev, Octavia Spencer blend?
Hands down, Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
I mean, I have never in my life been so ashamed of myself for doing something. I'll tell this quick story. I think I've told it before on the podcast, but I was not ashamed of myself. I felt like I messed up, but this was the point of the movie, and this will all make sense. So I was honored to be able to go to the White House when President Obama was giving the Presidential Medal of Freedom out. I've told this on the show before, I'm assuming. I'm sorry if I have. And on
when Spielberg was there?
Yeah, on the docket that day was Steven Spielberg, Barbara Streisand, James Taylor. James Taylor, is that? Yeah. And and Katherine Johnson. And I'm in a room with President Barack Obama. I mean, you know, we're in the White House. I'm in the, I think it was the East Room, or I can't remember off the top of my head, but I've never
that's
been
amazing
in
by itself.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. Like when I get this email saying that President Obama is awarding the Presidential Medal of Freedom, they sent me because Steven Spielberg was there and they knew that I wanted to see Steven Spielberg. And I'll never forget being in that room. And while President Obama, I mean, I'm 50 yards away from everybody. They're right in front of me. I'm in the same room as everybody. But before the event started, I got to walk up and see the Medal of Freedoms. I got to like touch them. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
So he awards the Medal of Freedom. He puts it around each person's neck and, you know, has a great speech about it. And one of the persons there was Katherine Johnson. And I remember in the back in my head, I'm like, oh my God, it's Steven Spielberg, it's Barbara Streisand, and like, you know, I'm geeking out. And I hear him talk about Katherine Johnson, but I'm not processing it. You know what I mean? I'm kind of in my own mindset. Again, I was geeking out. I've never been to the White House before, except for when I was a kid for a little tour. I'd never seen Barack Obama, you know, in that setting. It was pretty amazing. But I just didn't concentrate on every detail that I wanted to. And I'll never forget, like, I ended up being able to interview Spielberg there and Barbra Streisand. And I left the White House and I was like super excited. I put the package on the air. I felt really happy with how it went. And I was, you know, done for my day. And then Hidden Figures comes along, you know, when however long it was afterwards, which the entire point of that film was the mistake that I made that day, which was not paying attention to Katherine Johnson in the sense of she was a hidden figure, right?
For you that day.
That story was not known to me. And yeah. I did not understand how brilliant of an individual she was. And I'm honored to have been in the same room with her now that I look back on it. But I see the film and I immediately think to myself, hold on a second. Is that the same Katherine Johnson that I was in the room with? Mm-hmm. And then I go see the film and I'm like, oh my God, I would have loved to have talked to her. You know what I mean? Mm. I would love to have interviewed her. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make is that the movie,
bless you,
the movie itself was the purpose of that film was to tell that story and make people understand who these incredible women were. Mm-hmm. And that film, and again, I'm not saying Octavia Spencer plays Katherine Johnson. I'm just saying, because that was played by Taraji P. Henson. But the reason I'm bringing this film up is because that's the story of the film. So Octavia Spencer, my favorite movie she's ever been in, is this one because of what these women did and the mm-hmm. and the amazing idea of bringing that story to life. And so for me, that's why that's my favorite film of hers, is because it stood for something that taught me something I did not know. And it made me understand that I need to have a broader sense of the world versus just the movie aspect of it.
Fantastic. Terrific choice. Well, our very good friend, Michelle Garrist, who plays along on email, she also went with Hidden Figures. Dorothy Vaughn is the character who Octavia Spencer plays in that. Janice Fields went with The Shape of Water. Matt Pasentino went with Luce, Jake's pick. And Indy Christina says, while not the best movie, I pick Ma for my favorite performance. Sue Ann was a terrible, deeply disturbed person who could only be brought to life by Spencer. My first time seeing her play a villain, and she was scary.
You know, I never did see that.
Oh, it's actually good. I kind of dug it.
I thought that the general reaction was that it wasn't good.
I don't know,
and
man.
And now there seems
it.
To be this an affinity for it. But yeah. I felt like when it came out, people didn't like it, and now people talk about it. And it's not even that much time has passed, but like I feel like in a short amount of time, people went from making fun of it to like, oh my God, it's fantastic.
Well, I wouldn't say fantastic, but it's better than you think it is. And she's very fun in it. She plays a villain and has a good time with it. Basically, choose some scenery. All right, here we go. Next week, reaching out on Twitter using hashtag Christopher Nolan Blend. You will let us know your favorite Christopher Nolan film. We will discuss more Christopher Nolan because that's officially what this podcast has become right now, a Christopher Nolan stan podcast. You can let us know on social media at hashtag Christopher Nolan Blend, or you can send us emails at realblend@cinemablend.com. Make sure it's your favorite. We're not trying to talk best, but we want to know what your favorite is and why you choose it. So you can also use that email to send us a review. This week's review comes from Nick. N-I-C, Nick. And he says, hi, Real Blend podcast team. First, I hope that you and your families are doing well during these very unprecedented times. Second, this podcast is fantastic. It's my favorite podcast. It's a podcast for anyone that loves film. The entire team does a great job of showing their love for cinema. This podcast also is beneficial because as a film student, I love hearing from the directors as well as the other guests that you have had on your show, from Tarantino, Michael Madsen, Todd Phillips, and many others. All the stories that they tell are fantastic. I also love the reviews you guys give, but what sets your reviews apart from the film critics is that you don't trash the films people make. You will say what you don't like or how it could have been better, and this is awesome to hear because I've made a couple of short films, and those are hard enough. Thank you for that. I also love hearing more about the films from the editing, music, sound editing, and mixing in the cinematography, it really is the director's podcast. I think you guys would like to listen to this. My friends and I are traveling to another state to see Tenet in 75mm on Monday, August 31st, because the theaters are still closed in California. Don't worry, we are going to be safe by practicing social distancing and wearing masks because we want the pandemic to end so that we can have the theater experience back to normal. So I'm going to branch in really quick and say, be as safe as possible, please. You know, it's great that you're going to go see Tenet. You could tell we were excited for it. We know you're definitely excited for it. Just be as careful as you possibly can if you're going to go see Tenet in theaters. He goes on to say, Sean, congratulations on seeing the Snyder Cut being released. I can't wait to read your book. Sean, you were also in some DC comic books because of your Birds of Prey review. I hope you can get a copy. Okay, I don't know what that means, but that sounds pretty awesome. So if you can email me, Sean@cinemablend.com, I would like for you to elaborate on what that means.
My assumption was like, because he specifically says your review, is this like, it's an ad for Birds of Prey and they put your review on it, which is awesome.
Like maybe.
Your name's on a comic book? Yeah. That's pretty sick.
I'll take it. That's great. So anyway, Kevin, he says, Kevin, a couple of weeks ago, you asked what the sight line the actors in Hamilton used when they looked at. I saw the show a week before it was shut down in San Francisco because of COVID-19. The people behind me showed me that there is a TV that has the conductor on it. They do that so the actors can stay on track in case the orchestra goes off the cue. So there you go, Kev. That's what the people in Hamilton are looking at. Jake, you're the only one who truly understands Christopher Nolan, because The Dark Knight is his masterpiece and the greatest comic book movie ever. Unless Tenet is his masterpiece, he says, which is very possible. Gabe, please get more speaking time. I enjoy hearing your thoughts and opinions.
I was really digging this till about that point.
Well, that's not so bad. Come on. And then he says, thanks, Nick. Also, Dunkirk or Tenet if it changed. Or Larry Crown if you are listening to the premium blend. So,
did you guys catch listeners being really pissed that they went to watch Larry Crown and it was bad?
Well, it's bad. It's terrible. It's Jake, come on, you have to admit it's not a good movie.
They were like, what are you guys doing? I was like, I blame Jake. I never said it was good.
No, I don't know why I even said it. It makes no sense. Like most of this show, it makes no sense. But listen, look at how upset Jake is. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. We're going to be playing, obviously, Christopher Nolan blend. We're going to be potentially giving some more spoilery details about the film. We will talk about New Mutants, which we'll finally get a chance to see. So we'll be back next week. Plug the premium subscription. Of course, obviously, we are starting this new premium show. We deliver it every Monday, and there's also a newsletter that goes out every other Friday. And this week, I talk about my return to cinemas and tease a couple of other really cool articles that we had on Cinema Blend, and then I make a film streaming recommendation. So you guys can find that if you sign up for the premium subscription. Until then, we are on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, and at Sean_O'Connell. Please drop us a review. Tune in to next week's episode. And until then, my friends,
Dunkirk.
Thank you.